Good afternoon. It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station. Broadcasting from atop Signal Hill here in Kodiak, where it is 25 degrees right now. A little crispy out there. We're looking for a 40% chance of snow today, mainly after noon. Cloudy skies, high near 39, calm winds. Rain and snow likely before midnight tonight, then snow between midnight and 3 a.m., then rain and snow after 3 a.m., low of about 33 overnight tonight. East wind to 10 miles per hour with gusts as high as 20. Coming up on the midday news, Astra successfully launches their rocket. The Kodiak Harvest Food Cooperative is awarded a grant. Governor Mike Dunleavy's proposed state budget. We learn more about that. And what does the Gwich'in Steering Committee think about drilling in the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge? That and more after this news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Tens of millions of people across the northeastern U.S. and points south are getting a wintry mix of sleet, heavy snow, or both. The onset of this storm adds to the disruptions the coronavirus pandemic has caused to local transportation systems. Connecticut Public Radio's Ali Warshavsky reports on how state officials are responding, even as many of their own employees are sidelined due to COVID-19.
Connecticut is preparing for up to 18 inches of snow. Department of Transportation Commissioner Robert Giulietti says the state faces a tough challenge at a time when his agency is under severe strain.
We have over 100 employees that have tested positive. I have almost double that number that are waiting for tests.
Giulietti says the state has always used contractors to help with snow removal during major storms, but it will need even more help this year to clear 11,000 miles of roadway. For NPR News, I'm Ali Warshavsky in Stamford.
Vaccinations are underway at U.S. nursing homes, which account for nearly a third of all COVID-19 deaths in the country so far. On Tuesday, the U.S. again recorded more than 3,000 deaths in a single day. Congress is reported to be close to reaching a deal on the next round of financial relief from the pandemic after months of gridlock. NPR's Windsor Johnston gives us an update on a roughly $900 billion package that could be linked to a larger spending bill that keeps government running.
The latest relief measure will likely include an extension of extra weekly unemployment benefits, another round of direct payments for eligible Americans, and an extended ban on evictions. The measure is not expected to include additional federal aid for state and local governments or liability protections for businesses, two of the main sticking points in negotiations thus far.
NPR's Windsor Johnston reporting. It took decades to right a wrong, but Major League Baseball will now update its official records to include the stats of thousands of players who were part of the Negro Leagues. NPR's Tom Goldman reports on this watershed moment in sports.
The announcement comes during the 100th anniversary year of the start of the Negro Leagues. It confirms what many already knew. The approximately 3,400 players kept out of the segregated majors were in fact major league caliber ball players. In 1969, an all-white MLB committee gave major league status to six previous baseball leagues without considering the Negro Leagues. Baseball now says that omission was clearly an error. MLB's official historian John Thorne told the sports website The Ringer, quote, "It's both imperative and satisfying to see MLB admit to a mistake and try to right it." MLB now will launch a review of how to incorporate Negro League player statistics into the official Major League record books. Tom Goldman, NPR News.
You're listening to NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Astra, the California-based aerospace company, successfully launched their Rocket 3.2 into orbit from the Pacific Spaceport Complex near Pasagchaik Tuesday afternoon. While their goal was not primarily to reach orbit, according to Astra head of communications Alexis Georgeson, the rocket's successful launch indicates that the changes made from the failed launches of previous rockets earlier this year were successful. The rocket launched Tuesday carrying no payload, but the ultimate purpose of Astra's rockets is to carry small payloads, namely small satellites, into low orbit. Rocket 3.2 is a relatively small rocket, only 40 feet tall, which makes it more portable. Astra says its rapid manufacturing and focus on small payloads, what they call a mass market delivery system, makes their launch system more cost-effective than other aerospace operations. Today's launch comes on the heels of more good news for Astra, which won a multi-million-dollar contract from NASA last week to launch miniature satellites. These satellites, called SmallSats, will help NASA conduct research at a lower cost. The Kodiak Harvest Food Cooperative, or KHFC, has been awarded nearly $293,000 from the United States Department of Agriculture Local Foods Promotion Program. The award will be matched at 25% from member investments and in volunteer hours, making for an additional $73,000. Those funds will go a long way to bringing the KHFC dream to fruition, a sustainable, community-operated grocery store for local fish and produce.
Our long-term vision at the beginning when we had first started the project 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, was really to build a community-owned full-service grocery store that emphasized locally harvested seafood and produce and then supplemented with regionally sourced goods. So this local foods promotion program grant fits directly into our vision and our long-term goal of being a source for locally grown produce and locally caught seafood in the Kodiak community.
That's Tyler Cornelis, president of the board of directors for KHFC. He says this grant will allow them to start an online marketplace for local produce.
But it's really important that we all lock arms and help those Alaskans that are having a difficult time because of this.
That was not the right one. That was actually the governor. Those looking to find out more can look online.
Governor Dunleavy says Alaska.
At their website, that's the Kodiak Harvest Food Cooperative website. Governor Dunleavy's proposed state budget does something Alaska hasn't done before, draw more than $3 billion more than planned from the Alaska Permanent Fund. That puts the budget on a collision course with a state law intended to build the fund in the future. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
Governor Dunleavy says Alaskans and Alaska's economy would benefit next year from receiving full permanent fund dividends under the formula in state law. That's projected to be more than $3,000. And he wants to pay out an additional nearly $2,000 to make up for what Alaskans would have received this year in PFDs had the state followed the formula. All of that money would be in addition to what the state's already planned to draw from the Alaska Permanent Fund's earnings reserve. The governor says it's a one-time solution.
So I want people to understand that this is not going to be a situation where my administration is going to go to the earnings reserve of the permanent fund on a consistent basis to pay for large outlays. But this year is different. This year we have to get this economy back up off its knees and on its feet.
This year is different. But what's not new is that this is the seventh straight year there's a gap between what Alaska would spend and what it's bringing in. And what's been in the state's main piggy banks to close these gaps is almost gone. That leaves the earnings reserve as the last account left. Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation CEO Angela Rodell stays away from budget politics, but she laid out the stakes of overdrawing from fund earnings more than a week before Dunleavy introduced the budget.
And so we just have to recognize that if we want to have a robust, stable revenue source for multi-years to take care of our kids, to take care of our grandchildren, to support the state, that we need to be conscientious about how we use the fund and be very prudent in our spending.
She was speaking at a presentation to the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. The emphasis on prudence was behind the law the legislature passed 2 years ago that limits annual draws from fund earnings to roughly 5% of its market value. Rodell says it would be unfortunate for the state to go down a different path than the one laid out in the law.
The state can pay a full PFD, or it can pay for other essential services, but it can't do both at the full rate it has been.
But the governor's budget tries to do both. Although it does include some spending cuts, they're not on the large scale he proposed 2 years ago. Dunleavy didn't say last week how he would close most of the $2 billion gap in the budget that would still exist after this year. He did lay out one major proposal, changing the formula for the dividend. In the existing formula, dividends are half of the fund's average recent earnings growth. When times are good, dividends are high. During periods with long down markets, smaller dividends. The new formula wouldn't be based on earnings growth. Instead, it would be based on a share of the annual draw. That draw is based on the fund's overall market value, including both earnings and the fund's constitutionally protected principal. It won't go up and down as much as the current formula. The governor wants the change to be subject to a vote of the people of Alaska through a proposed constitutional amendment that would enshrine the PFD in the Constitution. It doesn't currently have that protection. The change would reduce dividends by just over $400 million the first year, which would be in the fall of 2022. But that's for the future. This year, Dunleavy's plan for two PFD payments would drain more than $3 billion from the fund, beyond the $3 billion that was already planned. Dunleavy says the people of the state should be able to weigh in on any long-term budget solution. Besides enshrining the PFD, he has two other ideas for amending the Constitution. One would require the public to vote on new taxes, and the other would lower the limit on how much the state can spend.
Just like what happened decades ago that gave us the permanent fund that allows us to have this discussion today, the very people of Alaska voted on that permanent fund. We all think that was a wise idea. Why not give them an opportunity to vote on how they want to be taxed if they do? What changes to the permanent fund, if any, that they would agree to? And in terms of spending limits, why not engage the people of Alaska?
The proposal faces an uncertain reception in the legislature. The day the budget came out, one of the current leaders in the legislature says he expects the plan to meet strong resistance. House Speaker Bryce Edgman, a Dillingham independent, says some lawmakers want to pay as large a dividend as possible.
But the question before us, and I think in front of all of Alaska, is do we spend down the earnings from the permanent fund to meet today's cost at the expense of tomorrow's generation, where there may not be a permanent fund dividend, where you may compromise the earnings of the permanent fund, because if this year was a good year and the earnings, next year could be a not so good year. The year after that can be very poor.
The next step in the budget process starts on January 19th, when the legislature reconvenes. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Coastal Alaskan lawmakers say they're unhappy with Governor Dunleavy's proposal to cut more than $2 million from the state ferries system's operating budget. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the proposal will likely prolong the debate over the Alaska Marine Highway System's future during the legislative session that starts next month.
Governor Dunleavy proposes about $51 million to run state ferries. It's actually slightly more than he initially proposed last year, but it's much less than historically appropriated to the fleet. Lawmakers weren't comfortable with Dunleavy's budget last year. They added about 25% more to their budget to reduce service gaps, but the governor erased most of the extra funding with a stroke of his veto pen. Now he's proposing to run the ferries with $2.4 million less than he ultimately signed off on last year. He told reporters that he's looking for guidance from a task force he appointed that spent most of the year studying the Marine Highway and delivered its final report this fall.
We really believe that there needs to be a discussion with the Marine Highway Reshaping Committee, which I hope also takes place, and we'll be talking to the legislature about that, because that committee worked on looking at ways to, again, make the ferry system sustainable for coastal Alaska.
He's had that report since the 1st of October, and to my knowledge, there's been no outreach to that reshaping group.
Kodiak Republican Representative Louise Stutes sat on the nine-member work group.
And there was no suggestions whatsoever in that report that that budget should be cut.
Stutes also co-chaired the House Transportation Committee during the last legislative session. She's a staunch defender of public investment on the Alaska Marine Highway and critical of the governor.
He says he's listening to Alaskans. Well, he apparently didn't hear the outcry of people in support of the Marine Highway system.
Funding for the Marine Highway will likely be contentious in Juneau this year. Rail Belt interests have long criticized the expense of running the fleet, while coastal residents argue it's critical infrastructure for communities with little or no road access. Ketchikan Independent Representative Dan Ortez co-chaired the House Finance Committee for the past 2 years. He says long service gaps are already a problem at current levels, and he calls the governor's ferry budget disappointing.
It was an indication to me that the Marine Highway continues not to be a priority for this particular governor, even though it's certainly an integral part of our transportation system infrastructure for all coastal Alaskans.
This year, the Department of Transportation reported a steep drop in fare revenue as fewer people traveled during the COVID-19 pandemic. DOT has been scheduling one mainliner at a time that leaves little to no slack in the system if a ship breaks down. That's led to months-long service gaps, planned and unplanned, as the fleet struggles to keep communities connected. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
The Gwich'in Steering Committee and conservation groups have asked a judge to step in and block the upcoming sale of oil drilling rights in the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Their motions for a preliminary injunction come in ongoing lawsuits that challenge the Trump administration's oil leasing program for the refuge. Brooke Brisson, a senior staff attorney at Trustees for Alaska, which represents the Gwich'in and several conservation groups, she says they want the judge to prevent the federal government from issuing leases and permitting seismic work until those lawsuits are resolved. And she believes they can prove that there will be irreparable harm unless an injunction is issued.
Exploration drilling, gravel mining, road building, those are all very clearly incredibly harmful to the coastal plain and its resources.
The federal government counters that it is following the law and has made science-based decisions to determine where and under what conditions oil development can occur. The Trump administration is planning to hold the first ever oil and gas lease sale in the refuge on January 6th. The groups opposed the sale are asking the judge to intervene by that day. Oil company Hilcor has received the last regulatory approval in its deal to buy the Alaska assets once owned by BP. The Regulatory Commission of Alaska, or RCA, issued its long-awaited decision last night. It allows Hilcor's affiliate company to take possession of BP's ownership stake of just under half of the Trans-Alaska oil pipeline system. The first chunk of the $5.5 billion Hilcor-BP deal has already been approved. Over the summer, Hilcor took over BP's interest in the massive Prudhoe Bay field. The deal launches Hilcor into the position of Alaska's second largest oil producer.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Plant-based seafood makers push back against labeling. More after this.
Did you know that eating wild and sustainable Alaska seafood can boost your immune system? Learn more about Alaska seafood's many proven nutritional benefits at wildalaskaseafood.com.
Plant-based seafoods such as vegan shrimp, crab cakes, or tuna are a growing rage, but unclear labeling is confusing customers. A new study done by Food Minds showed that about 40% of consumers believed plant-based imitations contain actual seafood. Up to 60% thought the products had similar nutritional content as real fish. Yet fake seafood producers are pushing back against labels that tell exactly what's in their products.
We have to ensure that the labels themselves are educating people about something as simple as what's in the package. And a lot of these plant-based alternatives have suggested that they have the First Amendment right to call their product whatever they want.
Gavin Gibbons is Vice President for Communications at the National Fisheries Institute, the nation's largest seafood trade group. There is nothing wrong with the vegan seafood products, Gibbons says, but the makers don't even want the term imitation included on their packaging.
A package has something called a statement of identity on it. It is supposed to tell consumers what is in the package. And a lot of these highly processed plant-based alternatives have labels that tell you what is not in the package. For instance, it says vegan shrimp. Well, it's a vegan product that does not contain shrimp.
Gibbons says NFI is working to get a federal labeling fix, and there is support on Capitol Hill. Meanwhile, without any evidence, vegan seafood makers insist customers know what they're getting. Ironically, their promotions brutally bash the seafood industry as being unsustainable and cruel, and urges customers to leave fish off their plates for good. Find links at AlaskaFishRadio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the 16th day of December, the year 2020. The sun rose today at 9:50, and it will set again at 4:23 this afternoon. That's going to give us 6 hours and 32 minutes of precious daylight, a loss of a mere 46 seconds compared to yesterday. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 2:31 this afternoon. That will be a 10.86-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:23 p.m., another minus tide, minus 1.77 feet. The next high tide will be at 4:01 a.m., 7.9 feet, about an 8-foot tide. And our low tide for tomorrow morning on the east side will be at 9:10 a.m., a 2.73-foot tide. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a high tide coming up at 3:04 this afternoon, a 17.6-foot tide. Your next low tide will be at 9:47 p.m., a minus 3.12-foot tide. Your next high tide will be at 4:14 a.m., a 15.8 feet, followed by a low tide tomorrow morning on the west side at 9:57 a.m. of 2.46 feet. 25 somewhat chilly degrees out there in Kodiak. It's a pleasant day, though, partly cloudy skies. They're saying we have a 40% chance of snow at least after 4 p.m. or after 1 p.m. Cloudy skies, calm winds, rain and snow likely tonight before 1 a.m., then snow between 1 and 4 a.m., then rain and snow after 4 a.m., a low of about 33 overnight. Light and variable winds should turn to the east and go to 10 miles per hour and gust as high as 20 miles per hour. For tomorrow, rain and snow before 10 a.m., then rain between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m., then rain and snow likely after 4 p.m. with a high near 40. Northeast wind could gust as high as 25 miles per hour tomorrow. Chance of precipitation is 90%, so new rain and snow accumulation of around an inch is possible for tomorrow. Mariners, here is your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. An area of low pressure will linger over the North Gulf Coast through Thursday evening. A 984 millibar North Pacific low will move to 300 nautical miles southwest of Chirikoff Island and then move to 110 nautical miles southeast of Middleton Island and go to 974 millibars on Thursday night. As a result, for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore, we have a small craft advisory through Thursday. South winds to 20 knots right now and seas to 8 feet. Will become east winds to 30 knots after midnight tonight and seas to 9 feet. For tomorrow, look for north winds to 30 knots, except northeast 20 north of Dangerous Cape. Seas to 9 feet on the east side tomorrow. And for tomorrow night, northwest 25, seas to 11 feet. Over on the west side in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory tonight and Thursday. Southwest winds 15 knots will turn to the southeast this afternoon and gust to 20 knots, and then turn to the northeast tonight, go to 30 knots after midnight. Seas building to 6 feet after midnight in the Shelikof and 13 feet overnight. On Thursday, northeast wind to Thursday to 30 knots in the Shelikof and seas to 14 feet. For inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays, we have southwest wind to 10 knots in the morning, should become light and variable, seas to 3 feet. For tonight, east wind to 20 knots and seas to 5 feet. The Kodiak Hospital Auxiliary's Angels of Love effort works differently this COVID year. As in previous years, all donations go to the KHA's scholarship program, which supports Kodiak students in the health-related field. The program includes Margaret Hall Scholarship, honoring KHA's dear friend and member who passed recently. Your suggested donation of $10 will be either in memory of a loved one or in honor of an esteemed person. Since the PKIMC Hospital Holiday Tree is not available this year, your names will be on the virtual tree on our Facebook page. To arrange your special person's recognition, please call Roberta at 486-6189. That number, 486-6189. Due to a close contact with the COVID-19 among staff at the Kodiak Public Library, the library will be closed until next Monday, December 21st. Trivia will still be held on Wednesday nights, and next week's craft session will be postponed until Tuesday. Supplies can be picked up next week for that. And they appreciate your understanding and wish everyone good health and to stay safe. The City Clerk Hiring Committee is holding a meeting on Thursday. The meeting will begin at 3 p.m. It will be held virtually, and those participating, via audio video conferencing, maybe a few in person. The meeting will be web streamed, and the web streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. For those who wish to request printed meeting materials or have questions regarding the meeting, contact the clerk's office at 486-8636. The Kodiak Bear Paw Quilters are having their virtual online sale. This show is online, already started on December 12th, and it's only for 1 week. So get your Christmas gifts by going online to Kodiak Bear Paw Quilters. And let me see, I'm looking at the site now. Or you can search Kodiak Bear Paw Quilters Guild. And the way it works is you can browse photos in the two galleries. And if you like something that you see, you can simply call to order something. The number to call is 942-3868. But again, just click on Kodiak Bear Paw Quilters Guild to look for some quilts for sale. Meetings coming up tonight. There's a Planning and Zoning Regular Commission meeting at 6:30 p.m. That will be happening via teleconference. Check on the Kodiak Island Borough website for that. And the Assembly is having a regular meeting on Thursday, also at 6:30 p.m., also via teleconference. And again, click on the Kodiak Island Borough website for more details. All are invited to lift your voices and sing along with school district music for the Kodiak Island Children's Christmas Concert. Gather the whole family, dress in your finest and funniest holiday gear, and sing along at home tonight at 7 p.m., with the music played here on KMXT. To find out more information and for lyrics to the songs on the district's website, look on the district's website at kibsd.org. Just look for the singing children at the left-hand side of the page. And again, that's tonight, 7 p.m., right here on KMXT.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT two times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.